We are concerned today with a giant. So vast is his size that no man can comprehend his dimension. So much variety is within him that his complexity defies description. In the past, some have said that the giant was asleep. They saw no movement, detected no sign of wakefulness. He was not asleep. There was always within him a wakeful, vibrant life. What was asleep, quite often, was the ability of the observers to detect and know his wakefulness. Now everyone can see that the giant is awake and stirring, preparing to claim a new place in the world. Now everyone can see the stirring of the giant, for his name is Africa.
United Nations Radio presents A Stirring of the Giant. Here are some of the new things out of Africa. Here are some of the new thoughts and plans from the fastest changing continent in the world. Here are some of the reasons why Africa can no longer be called the Dark Continent. This is A Stirring of the Giant.
Would you consider taking a journey of some 14,000 miles? It will cost next to nothing. You'll be home in a minute. We are traveling by pencil. There is something neat and regular about the map of Africa. It's an easy continent to draw an outline, a difficult one to comprehend in depth. Our journey on paper begins at Tangier. The navigator is ready. Please to embark.
Eastward from the Straits of Gibraltar, along the unique blue of the Mediterranean. Gently past Morocco, Algeria, to Tunis. Here, dip sharply down for the great Bay of Libya, with its long, arid coast. 1,000 miles are done. 1,000 more takes us past the delta of the Nile, father and mother of all rivers. We turn at Suez and dig our own canal with a pencil stroke. Pause an instant at Port Sudan on the Red Sea. Then move resolutely past the Eritrean coast, southeastward to the Horn of Africa, where the Somalis live. Double past the Eastern Cape and call in briefly at Mombasa, where the dhows ride at anchor. They've been coming here for 3,000 years. Then southward once again to Zanzibar, where the perfume of cloves projects itself 100 miles with the wind. Take your pencil gently around the curve of Mozambique to the green sugar fields of Natal. Change course to southwest, then due west, and sail round the fairest cape that Francis Drake did see in all the circumference of the earth. Our course now is north, and the land on our right is the desert of southwest Africa and Angola. A touch of green gives warning of the tropics, and soon our pencil strokes smoothly past the mouth of the Congo. Turn sharply to the left at the Cameroons, and skim along the mangrove, palm-lined coast of Nigeria, the lagoons of Dahomey, the white castles of Ghana. Palms of the Guinea coast we leave behind us, at Liberia and Sierra Leone. For we have turned north again, past Dakar. And what is left save 1,000 miles of Sahara's shore before our steady, hand-guided craft brings us safely by Casablanca and Rabat to the Mediterranean once again. The journey is complete.
Thank you, Navigator. We've drawn a perimeter around 200 million people, 12 million square miles of land, 700 languages, 42 distinct political divisions, scores of faiths and creeds, a dozen varied climatic zones, a handful of the most grievous human problems, and some of the most dramatic possibilities and opportunities of our time. We have circumnavigated one continent. Africa, one continent? That is new in itself. In the past, there have been many Africas, seldom one. In some senses, that is still true. Hear the geographer.
There is British Africa, French Africa, Belgian Africa, Portuguese Africa, Spanish Africa. There is independent Africa, there is trusteeship Africa. There is Africa north of the Sahara, tropical Africa, Africa south of Capricorn. There is Christian Africa, Islamic Africa, the Africas of a score of other faiths. There is Africa of the coastal plains, of the interior plateaus. Africa of the vast deserts, the dense forests, the great lakes and the high mountains. There is Negro Africa and Bantu Africa, Semitic, Nilotic, Hamitic, Cushitic Africa, and the Africa of the once immigrant communities now settled there, European and non-European.
All these have been and still are. But there is also today one Africa. Witness a decision of the United Nations Economic and Social Council, dated 29 April 1958.
The geographical scope of the Commission's work shall be the whole continent of Africa, Madagascar, and the other African islands.
Created at United Nations headquarters, a United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, a body to help
concerted action for the economic development of Africa, including its social aspects, with a view to raising the level of economic activity and levels of living in Africa, and for maintaining and strengthening the economic relations of countries and territories of Africa, both among themselves and with other countries of the world.
Membership in the new commission to be open to
the independent countries of Africa, namely Ethiopia, Ghana, Liberia, Libya, Morocco, Sudan, Tunisia, the Union of South Africa, the United Arab Republic. States located outside Africa which have territorial responsibility within the continent, namely Belgium, France, Italy, Portugal, Spain, the United Kingdom.
Associate membership is open to territories within Africa which are not yet independent. Associate members have all rights save that of the vote. One Africa.
Adopted United Nations Headquarters, April 29th, 1958.
The decision of April 1958 is both the end of a chapter and the beginning of another. It's a milestone in the dynamic journey of a continent once thought to be without dynamism. That journey is still very much in progress, but enough has happened, and particularly in the last decade, to make the creation of an African Economic Commission a response to a clear-cut necessity. The vote on its creation was unanimous. How do Africans live? How could they live in 10, 20, 30 years from now if some of the present-day plans come off? What part can the United Nations family of organizations, and particularly the new Economic Commission for Africa, play in making these plans materialize? With these questions uppermost, United Nations Radio recently sent a reporter to travel in tropical Africa to talk with leaders and economic planners to see and hear some of the plans. What follows is an account of some of the progress he found.
Most Africans still live by growing the food they eat, as their ancestors have done through all history, by digging the ground or by grazing the herds upon which their lives depend, by selling or bartering just some of their produce for those few manufactured things which they need or want. Some Africans, and their number has grown much in recent years, live by growing or mining products for processing and sale in other places, mostly in other continents. A small but growing number of Africans live by making, sometimes out of local materials, the things which other Africans need and buy. Finally, some Africans live by running the services, the roads and schools and trains and hospitals, which make all the other activities possible. Their number is constantly growing.
This is a song of the Maasai people, hunters and herdsmen, who live in East Africa. They are nomadic and live from what their flocks produce. The Maasai people are typical of what economists call a subsistence-level population. But throughout the continent, the majority of Africans are herdsmen or agriculturists who feed themselves and their families only. Subsistence agriculture, growing barely enough food to keep the farmer's family group alive, sounds pretty frugal. But it is today a luxury which few modern states can afford.
In a modern community, one family produces enough food in a year to feed itself and nine other families. This is the case in England and the United States. In Africa, one family produces only enough food to feed itself and about one half of another family. A reasonable standard of living requires that labor be released from food farming to produce a wide range of other goods and services. This is an area of which each African administration, without exception, is deeply conscious, and there is strenuous activity by national and territorial agriculture departments, assisted in a number of areas by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Vanilla, tin, copra, salt, chrome, sisal, cork, cloves, molybdenum, titanium, tea, peanuts, bananas. These are the things by which millions of Africans live. In the first 10 years after the war, the prices for these African commodities rose steadily. The world had, as it still has, a great need for what comes off Africa's fields or out of her deep mines. With their economies tied strongly to mineral wealth, South Africa and the Rhodesias have used the new earnings to further expand mineral production and to open new manufacturing industries. A whole variety of locally needed products are now made in those countries. And the post-war boom even spurred industrial activity in some parts of the continent where it was brand new. There is, for example, a nail factory in Ghana.
How many do you get an hour out of this one machine?
600 nails per minute.
You have machines to cope with varying gauges, do you?
Yes.
Why? How many in all?
9 machines, all told.
Do you have any difficulty in disposing of your product?
No, we sell all we can make and more.
A wire nail factory in Accra, turning out 900 tons of nails a year. A shoe factory at Limuru in Kenya, making 2 million pairs of shoes a year, using African hides and skins, African labor. Leaders across the continent can give other examples. The Prime Minister of Nigeria.
In Kaduna, we now have Nigerians working in modern factory conditions in the recently completed textile mill. At Enugu, in the new cement works, and at Ibadan, in an up-to-date cigarette factory.
Kenya's Minister of Commerce.
Today, there is a canning industry with 6 or 7 factories. There is also a ready-made clothing industry. A large paper mill is being constructed 30 miles from Nairobi by a well-known Danish group. There are many other examples, such as boots and shoes, plastic materials, blankets, not to mention such consumable goods as cigarettes, beer, soft drinks, and so on.
Increased earnings from primary products have attracted to Africa new capital from across the seas. New ground has been prospected for minerals, new acreage placed under commodity crops, more cocoa in West Africa, more sisal in East Africa, more coffee in the highlands. In the Sudan, home of the great Gezira cotton scheme, where the Sennar Dam irrigates 1 million acres, 34,000 farmers are partners with the government, and the Gezira board is growing Sudan's famous cotton. Sudan's prime minister speaks of other agricultural development plans.
Cattle breeding is going very well. The trouble about it is the transport for other countries from this Sudan. Our communication is not yet good, but we hope that we'll improve it very much, and probably the future transport is going to be the aeroplane. I think the second development in mind is mineral research, which we believe that it will start very soon. A lot of scientists who just came to the Sudan and researched the area, they believe that we will find petrol or oil, and in certain cases, gold.
Other searches in other parts of Africa have made some striking discoveries. Oil has been found in the deep Sahara of Algeria. Oil in spectacular quantities. Other finds have been made in Nigeria. Intensive search is underway in Somalia, Tanganyika, and the Congo. Large-scale plans for the development of national resources were drawn up and discussed in many African capitals. New products from land and sea. New and more efficient avenues for transport. In the West African nation of Ghana, construction of the harbor of Tema is well advanced. 4,000 miles from Tema to the southwest is another massive and striking venture. Throughout southern Africa, its name is now a household word, Kariba. In the heart of Central Africa, one of the largest present-day engineering undertakings is now underway. The fabled Zambezi River is being plugged up with a spectacular pure arch dam at Kariba Gorge. Kariba Lake will be by far the greatest man-made body of water in the world, 2,000 square miles in extent. Mr. R.A. Tennant is the representative at Kariba of the Rhodesian Federal Power Board.
Whereas now, from the top of these hills at Kariba, you look out into a vast valley and you see a range of hills 19 miles away, and you look in a westerly direction 60 miles away. All this will present a vast lake where there was no water before, but only the Zambezi winding its way through the valley.
Changing the landscape, dramatic though it may be, is not the reason the World Bank advanced $80 million for the Kariba project, more than one-third of its total cost. Deep within a hillside in Africa, a gigantic hydroelectric power station is taking shape.
We're going to go in the access tunnel for the power station, which is about 850 feet long, going down at a slope from the roadside, the edge of the river, down into the machine hall of the power station.
In 1960, power will begin to flow from Kariba, radiating out to mines and factories and homes.
What is the length of that hall that we see beyond?
475 feet.
An enormous building buried in the middle of a mountain in Rhodesia that we see stretching away, with a great vaulted arch roof, reminiscent in many ways of the concourse of Grand Central Station in New York. It's about the same dimension, too. This is the room where the generators will be located.
To your right.
And the turbines will be installed, in a row of six of them here?
That's right, down in the bottom of the powerhouse. You can see the foundations for the first turbine being installed now.
Is this as big a room? What's that for?
That's a blast warning.
I see. Where are they blasting? Down below?
Probably to the side in the transformer hall or the lift shaft.
Kariba is the largest, but it is by no means the only big water development project at present under construction in Africa. Much of East Africa, including Nairobi's growing industrial area, is served with electricity made by the Nile in its upper reaches. This is the Owens Falls scheme, now being enlarged. In the French Cameroons, the Adia Dam on the Sanaga River is being expanded to be used for the processing of aluminum.
In Africa, there is to be found more than two-fifths of all the hydroelectric potential of the whole world, developed and undeveloped. Africa has twice as much water power potential as any other continent.
That is the view of one of France's outstanding water development experts. Plans to harness this potential for the benefit of humanity are plentiful. Undertakings already in progress include...
Ethiopia, the Koka Dam, 50 miles from Addis Ababa, under construction.
Kambambe in Angola, a new power station on the Kwanza River.
Nigeria, the Shiroro Gorge, approved a plan to use the Kaduna River to provide low-cost electricity for industry in the northern province.
Some of the biggest blueprints are waiting for development capital.
Egypt, the Aswan High Dam, a massive undertaking of which much has been heard.
The Volta River project in Ghana, an $800 million plan to develop Ghana's aluminum resources and decrease the nation's dependence on cocoa.
Inga on the Congo. This is the biggest of them all. it would be the greatest hydroelectric project on Earth, turning out five times as much power as all France does today, to develop minerals and create a vast new industrial belt in the Belgian Congo.
Kouilou, Middle Congo, French Equatorial Africa, as much power as Kariba.
All of these plans exist at present in blueprint. Their chances of realization rest on ground much less secure, on the possibility of finding the necessary capital. And it is capital in staggering amounts for Africa. The Inga scheme alone would require $3,000 million spent over 30 years. Africa must compete on difficult terms with projects in every other continent. But her leaders and planners believe that in Africa, the world today has a chance of realizing some of humanity's boldest dreams of advancement. Many of them turn hopefully to the World Bank, which has so far lent nearly $500 million in Africa for railways, roads, ports, and electric power. In April 1958, Mr. Eugene Black, the chairman of the World Bank, told the Economic and Social Council,
"In Africa, our lending this year will approximate $100 million, and I can foresee a growing amount of bank activity in Africa. For the last 6 weeks, I've been traveling over half of the African continent that lies south of the Sahara. I came back from this trip very deeply impressed by the amount of dormant resources that can be awakened there."
But the bank's resources in the foreseeable future can only supply a fraction of what it will take to appease Africa's hunger for development capital. And hand in hand with this shortage of development funds goes the shortage of the necessary skills. Here also, the United Nations has been helping over the past 10 years and is helping today.
Technical assistance to Africa has steadily increased over the last 10 years, especially to the newly independent countries of Ghana, Morocco, and Tunisia. In 1957, the United Nations and its family of specialized agencies spent over $3 million for this purpose, at the request of 27 African nations and territories.
We have given you just glimpses of a continent on the march to a new life. Just a few cameos, but enough perhaps to catch something of the pace and the spirit in which Africa now moves. 1900 years ago, a Roman citizen named Pliny said,
"Ex Africa semper aliquid novi."
Out of Africa, there is always something new. Of the 1,000 new things out of Africa today, one is particularly sobering, and its possible effect on African growth is not yet to be calculated. Since 1954, the prices of the commodities by which Africans earn money have been falling. We quote the words of the United Nations World Economic Survey, African Supplement, June 1958.
The gradual weakening of primary commodity prices continued into the early months of 1956. The downward trend was resumed early in 1957, and by 1958 had declined to a low level.
Copper, sharply down. Aluminum, down. Cobalt, tin, zinc, lead, all down. Cotton, down. Coffee, weak. Of all the major commodity products of Africa, only cocoa has maintained its market value. The overall effect is serious. The World Economic Survey says,
territories have had either to cut expenditure or to postpone development plans. Development projects already started are being continued, but cuts and postponements in development plans not yet begun are much in evidence.
And it adds this final warning note.
Should the American recession spread to Europe, it could have considerable repercussions in Africa.
And so the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa begins its existence at a moment when a sobering note enters the symphony of progress to which we've been listening. To the thousands of unsolved problems of poverty, ill health, bad communications, uneconomic agriculture, ignorance, which live in Africa as neighbors to the newfound wealth and progress, this further issue must be added. The new forum in which all of the advances and the frustrations will be discussed is to be established at Addis Ababa, capital of Ethiopia.
We envisage that the Economic Commission for Africa will gradually grow and develop like its sister commissions.
In Europe, Asia, Latin America. The speaker is Yaqub Osman of the Sudan, spokesman of the African Independent Nations in the Economic and Social Council when it created the new commission.
The gap existing today between aspiration and the lack of opportunities can not only be dangerous, but explosive with a new tide of nationalism. Let it be known, there is no dark continent in this modern age of the United Nations.
The Council has acted. The wheels are turning. Before the year ends, the first meeting of Africa's new forum will be held. An international staff will soon assemble at Addis Ababa to begin work, to help carry out the tasks assigned to the new commission by the world community at large.
To undertake the collection, evaluation, and dissemination of economic, technological, and statistical information.
Technical terms meaning to find out.
To perform such advisory services as the countries and territories of the region may desire.
To advise.
To assist the Economic and Social Council in connection with any economic problem, including problems in the field of technical assistance.
To help.
To assist the formulation and development of coordinated policies as a basis for practical action in promoting economic and technological development of the region.
To plan and to build. In this newborn infant of the community of nations lies a unifying force. A force which makes all Africa one in the task of building a better life for all its people. All Africa one. Its varied creeds and faiths, its 42 separate political divisions, its 700 languages, its 12 million square miles, its 200 million people. This, in 1958, is the new thing out of Africa. This is the stirring of the giant.
The Stirring of the Giant. You have heard a United Nations program about some of the new things in Africa. It was written by George Mofshin, who also gathered the actuality material during a journey through the continent. A Stirring of the Giant was produced by Gary Stradling and is presented by national broadcasting organizations around the world as a service of United Nations Radio.